Hello, and welcome to the Off Kilter Quilt. My name is Frances, and I'll be your hostess. Hello, and welcome to episode 176, the What Happened to November episode. Today is November 30th, so we know that November at least had one day, but otherwise, I think it was just Halloween, and then I blinked and I landed here. Yeah, Monday, November 30th. I hope you had a good Thanksgiving. I had a nice Thanksgiving, although, sad to say, was sick. Guess who? Yeah, Will brought a bug home from the middle school. Everyone had it. A lot of people, a lot of kids and their parents were sick over Thanksgiving. Not a terrible bug, kind of headachy and tired. Kind of a wiped out bug, but not one of those things where you just can't even get out of bed. So yeah, Will brought it home and then gave it to me. And I still have it a little bit. I'm much better. Yesterday I thought I was over and done. And then today I was like, oh, maybe not. But anyway, but I'm fine. Don't worry about me. Just because I don't feel good and it's raining. Don't worry, because, you know, I don't complain about any of that stuff. I am a saint. Did you like the music? Did you like the lead-in? I have a lead-in now. See, yeah, I'm a professional quilting podcaster as of this episode, so we're going to be very serious, and I'm not telling you anything personal about my life. Did I say personable or personal? Either way, I'm not going to be personable and no personal stuff. Except the things I feel like I really need to tell you because it's important. The music is by Ben, our friend, and I hope to have a link to his production company site. If he has a site, I don't even know. He's got a production company, and it has a name. I don't know what it is. I have to ask the man. Anyway, he did our music. So now I have an intro and an outro. Like I told you, professional, yeah. And I have a new website, very professional. It is still being built, but now that's where you go. It's offkilterquilt.com. You can still go to the old website blog and click over to the new one. And it looks nice, and thanks to everyone who's commented on how nice it looks. The man built it, and it's still in process. There's a lot of stuff to be put up, but we just want to go ahead and make the switch. So yeah, professional. Yeah, that's me. Anyway, very excited for all this newness and fabulousness. And yeah, so last week, Thanksgiving, I was sick. I was going to do a whole lot of quilting and pre-holiday organizing, and that didn't happen, though I did reread Wolf Hall by Hilary Mantel, a book that I almost read all of several years ago. For some reason, it's like a 530-page book, and for some reason, I got to page 500 the first time around and stopped. I think I was exhausted at that point. You know, it's about Henry VIII and Anne Boleyn, and really about Thomas Cromwell, who's sort of the king's right-hand man. And I don't know, or at that time when I first read it, I didn't really know anything about that whole... I knew that Henry VIII had eight wives. Really, that's what I knew. And so, although I liked the book very much, obviously I liked it enough to get through 500 pages of it, there was a lot of keeping up and trying to figure things out. But, you know, this past spring, I watched Wolf Hall on PBS, and that was really helpful and clarifying. And then last week I watched it again. It's on Amazon Prime for free. And now I feel like I have such a great, vast knowledge of that period of history, of English history, that I decided, what the heck, I'm sick, I'm kind of bored. I'm going to read this book. And partly it's because I so much liked the character of Thomas Cromwell, particularly as portrayed by, I think, Mark Rylance, a great British actor, that I just wanted to continue to spend time with the character. And so I read the whole book this time, and it was great. I recommend it. I recommend watching the miniseries first and then reading the book, so you'll feel like you have a better understanding of what's happening. And now I'm reading Bringing Up the Bodies, which is the sequel to that. I'm not quite as engaged by it, but who knows? I'm just about 75 pages in. I'm engaged enough to keep reading and feel like it's worth a read. So that's what I did. And I sat in front of the fireplace, which was very nice. And I did cook Thanksgiving dinner, which was not a problem. I just sort of rested. I just could get everything. I always do this, even when I'm perfectly well. So I kind of start in the morning and do the things you can do ahead of time, which is everything from peeling the potatoes to making the fruit salad and the stuffing and what have you. So I did all that. So that was all fine. Now, Friday was the Black Friday sew-in that Sandy over at Quilting for the Rest of Us hosts every year. And that was good. I participated vaguely. I had plans on just being part of it all day, and I got all my stuff out for my table runner, my Christmas table runner, and took a picture of it and posted it. And that exhausted me, and that's pretty much what I did. But it was great to have the sew-in to sort of inspire me, at least to get everything laid back out and ready to go. And yesterday, I got a lot of work done. What was interesting is part of the process, part of of putting this table runner together, is doing some fusible applique, which I have not done really in any meaningful way for about 2 years. 2 years ago, I made a Christmas quilt, an applique Christmas quilt, which I love. If I think about it and can find the picture, I will post it so you can see it. I loved the process. You know, and I was talking last episode about patterns and process. And I was thinking, as I was thinking about the Christmas quilt today, I was thinking about how thoroughly I enjoyed the process of making that quilt. In fact, I feel almost nostalgic for it. Like I wish I were making it again for the first time. And it makes me think I need to do some more applique because I really enjoy it. It's perhaps needing a pattern to really inspire me. And I haven't really done a lot of searching around for applique patterns. So maybe I need to do that. I did see something on Instagram. There's a woman, and again, if I can find her, I will link to her in my show notes because I can't remember her name, but I think she's pretty professional. And she had some fabulous kind of fall slash Thanksgiving themed applique quilts that made me feel like, oh, I'd like to do that. So maybe. In any event, all this to say, it has been 2 years since I've done any applique. And so I had to do these snowflakes. And what it is, it's three red squares. I think the squares, let's call them 8x8. And then the snowflakes are 6 inches in diameter. They're not really circles, but you could draw a circle around the edges and then they would be circles. Anyway, and I was just like, I don't quite remember how I do this. Fortunately, I had a roll of seam to seam two, which I got at Hancock's about a year ago. I guess I had some thought that maybe I would do some applique. And it was when I think seam to seam is back to selling like packages of sheets, but for a while they had stopped, but you could buy it by the yard. So I bought a bunch. I guess maybe I just saw it and thought, I'm going to stock up on this. And I do think it seemed to seem, and I'm saying seam us to seam, and it's really seam a seam. Anyway, so I looked at the instructions yesterday. I'm like, oh yeah, I remember how to do this. And sure enough, I did, and it was fun. And I think so now but do you know how you have a part of a pattern, a step, whether you have a pattern or not, but a step in a quilt you're making that's going to be hard, and you kind of work around that step for as long as you can. And I'd kind of gotten to that point where I was like, I need to sit down and figure out the snowflakes and the applique. And I did, and I'm very pleased with myself. So at this point, I think I have all the smallest units pieced, and now it's a matter of doing the next stage of piecing, which shouldn't be too complicated. This is the kind of thing, if I had to have this done by tomorrow, I could. I don't, and I won't, but I could. One of the things, I just thought of this, that I did do last week, thinking about making things. I finished the first sock, I think, for my editor. I think I mentioned to you that her father passed away. It's been about a week and a half, and so I'm making her some socks. And but it did make me think about process and about what I like about knitting, what I like about quilting. And my thing that I like to say, which is knitting is sitting, quilting is moving. And so knitting is actually really good when you're just sitting and don't really feel like moving. But I think as much as I enjoy knitting, and I do find knitting a very meditative exercise, and so I think appropriate when you are grieving for a friend who is grieving for a loss, to knit. But I have to say, I'm very happy to be back to quilting. So, yay! What I will do next, I do not know. So, I have talked about doing a quilt for my nephew based on a piece of his artwork. And another thing that I will try to post in the show notes so you can see it. Here's the problem. So I sat down and I sat down and I was sick. So and that can shade how you see things. The problem with Devin's artwork. I mean, it's fabulous. It has no problem. But converting it to a quilt that is true to the original artwork is his picture, which is so cool. It's wonky. And like how, and so it's like, how do you measure wonky? How do you translate wonky into a cutting pattern? If I were to improvise, and I could do, that seems like a much more natural creative response to this artwork. And at the same time, I think it would be disappointing to say, here's this quilt I made that's inspired by your artwork. And then for Devin to look at and go, but yeah, that doesn't really look what I did. I mean, I think he would, I think it would be more pleasing to have sort of like his, just taking the picture that he did and blowing it up. Right, and then quilting it, right? Or transferring the picture, larger version, onto a piece of fabric and then quilting that fabric. But that's not going to happen. So I can't quite figure out how to make this quilt happen. So I'm not going to worry about it because guess what? It's November 30th. Christmas is coming, although I'm trying to ignore that fact to the best of my ability. We don't have a tree. We won't get it until the 12th. That's just how we do. I know we are outside of the culture at this point, and that's fine either way. I think people should find the tradition that works for them and do it. In this world we live in, we can't all be in lockstep. But I yeah, 2 weeks of Christmas is really plenty of Christmas for me. But I don't want to have any stressful projects leading up into that time. So I think once I finish the table runner, then I will work on doing some funky potholders for friends. And then my friend Kristen, who I met through this podcast, but who's become my friend in real life, had on Instagram some pictures of some darling Christmas pillows she made. And so I'm tempted maybe just to do some Christmas sewing and quilting and just small projects. I think that would be fun and get me into the new year. Jay and I, Jay, aka Art Quilt Maker, and I talked yesterday via Skype, and we are going to finish up the sampler quilt. I think we have one or two blocks left to do, and we're going to call it a quilt, and that will be interesting and good and fun and fine. And I feel like I owe Jay a great debt taking all this time to teach me, and it's been really important and helpful teaching. So that will certainly be on the docket, as well as my many unfinished projects, which will be, of course, replaced by new and exciting projects. But one day I will finish everything. I want to say thanks for the comments on episode 175. I appreciate everyone taking the time to come over and express your own thoughts about my thoughts. Thanks to Kate at Quilting Daydreams. Thank you to Jay, who, by the way, strongly recommends the new Kate Morton book, The Lake House, which I have in transit to the library. I put it on hold. And when I talked to Jay yesterday, I said, well, I was actually thinking about just waiting until Christmas and asking for it for Christmas. And she said, no, I had to read it now. So there you go. She loved it. Heard from Sandy and Noni and Kelly the Fifth and Quilt and Jenny and Colleen, AJ Dub and Mary Ann. Got several comments saying very nice things about the new website. Thank you so much. And of course, a couple comments that came in before they even listened to the podcast. And I appreciate and approve of those kind of comments. I just love comments. Thank you. I want to actually take this time right now. I want to read one of Quilt and Jenny's comments. She submitted two, and one of them she referred to as a grouchy rant, but I thought it was interesting. I thought it brought up interesting issues, so I want to share, and then we can think about this together, and perhaps you can reply and tell me and Jenny what you think about what she had to say. So here's what Jenny says. I hardly use patterns anymore for multiple reasons. This is Frances again. She is responding to my question from last episode, do you use patterns when you quilt? So I'm gonna begin again. I hardly use patterns anymore for multiple reasons. Partly because I like the challenge of coming up with my own designs. Even if I use a pattern, I always change it, at least a little bit, and partly because of the copyright conversation that has left a sour taste in my mouth. I hate the idea that I can work on a quilt for months, pouring my time and my skill and my fabric choices into it, but risk being called out because I followed someone else's instructions for assembling blocks or because I didn't list their name correctly on the label. Unfortunately, I've seen some pattern designers act like children, accusing others of copying their designs when they are really very basic traditional blocks. Sometimes people come up with the same idea completely independent of one another. See multiple discovery on Wikipedia. If it can happen with calculus and natural selection, surely it can happen with some squares and triangles. By the way, Grants is here. Let me tell you, the concept of multiple discovery, also known as simultaneous invention, is the hypothesis that most scientific discoveries and inventions are made independently and more or less simultaneously by multiple scientists and inventors. The concept of multiple discovery opposes a traditional view, the heroic theory of invention and discovery. Okay, back to Jenny. I think it's nice that you put the pattern name and designer on the label, but I think it's completely unnecessary. When you make a dress or knit a sweater, is the pattern and designer's name required to be inside? I've never seen anyone do that. Obviously, when I document it on my blog or journal, I make note of all the information I have, but I am loath to put their name on my quilt. I do believe this is part of the reason for the proliferation of modern improvisational quilting as well. And I find that last statement quite intriguing. I think the whole comment is great. I didn't think it was a grouchy rant. But I'm particularly intrigued and wonder if you have an opinion on this, dear listener. Is one reason quilters are moving away from patterns and traditional quilting into improv and modern quilting because they're tired of copyright issues? And another question is, can a pattern truly be owned? And that plays with some of the ideas I was talking about last time with these designers who I find idiosyncratic and who I would say own their ideas. And of course, I'm talking about my new hero, Victoria Finley Wolf, who I think does particularly, I was going to say unique, but I'm not supposed to, one should not modify unique, but does unique work that I think is very much her own. Is that when you see it, you know it's hers, etc. But you could stick. But she is playing with traditional tropes. There's no doubt about it. And once I say I like the way you're playing, Victoria, I'm going to play too. Then does it become mine? I mean, which to some extent is how quilting works, right? Is how art works. We're always collaborating, competing, playing with each other's ideas, taking someone's idea and going, I like that idea, but here's what I'm going to do with it that's a little bit different. So can patterns be truly owned? Obviously, there are a lot of pattern designers that think so, and I have not investigated the copyright law beyond that case we talked about. It's probably been a year and a half now, but I think it was in Canada where a designer sued. But have there been cases here in the States recently where pattern designers have sued and won? Therefore, the courts would... And if so, I mean, that means the courts are saying yes. And patterns can be owned. It's an interesting idea. What do you think? Now, I credit designers on my quilt labels for a couple of reasons. And one is because this person did the math. If nothing... else. Kim Brackman, who does the Scrap Basket quilt books. She's done all the math for me for about 6 or 7 quilts at this point. So, I do want to credit her. But I think Jenny's absolutely right. I mean, what Kim does is she takes the triangles and the squares and she rearranges them. And of course, a lot, I would argue... and you argue back. Maybe I'm wrong about this. But of course, a lot of quilt designers, when you look at their books, partly what they're doing so effectively is playing with color. But obviously color is not copyright. So you can learn from their color usage and do your own quilt saying, oh, I like how she used this grouping of colors together. But that's very different. The design is the triangles, squares, rectangles, and what have you. So, but I feel I owe a debt to certain people, again, just for doing the math. But more importantly to me, I mean, copyright infringement is kind of a non-issue for me. Although I suppose if someone got on me because Kim Brackett got on got on me because I show pictures of quilts I made using her patterns on my blog. You know, she and I would have to have words, and I would take the pictures down and say mean things about her on the podcast. So, but hopefully that's not going to be an issue. But the larger reason for me for putting that information on the labels, it does have to do with quilt history and the idea that 100 years from now, quilt historians will be looking at our quilts and trying to think about trends and designers who are important during this very rich, rich period of quilt making here in the US, as well as in the UK and Japan and in Australia. I mean, it's just this wildly vibrant time for quilting across the world. So to give them that information, I hope will be helpful should my quilts survive that long. And I'm sure because the people I give them to think they're so special and wonderful, they will store them properly in climate controlled environments. So yes, they should last. Anyway, so that is why the primary reason why I document. But I do also I don't have the same feelings that Jenny has, but although I understand Jenny's feelings, and I do think there's a lot of quilt design that I think is questionable when you're talking about authorship. And one of the things I was thinking about is occasionally if I need a fast quilt, and one of the places that I will look is Moda Bake Shop, because you know they post so many patterns that are free on the blog. But you know, a lot of the patterns, I mean, I'm looking for a quick quilt, and one of the reasons I'm looking there is a lot of the patterns are fairly basic patterns. Of course, what they're there for is to feature the fabric. They are, the pattern, the quilt is really a fabric showcase. Moda is trying to, say, here's our wonderful fabric and here's how it's being used. But that's a little, so the pattern itself is negligible in some ways in terms of importance. But yeah, but you look at some of the patterns, you're like, really? You get to sign your name to that and say, this is mine? Because a lot of us can sew pre-cut strips together and kind of cut them wonky. And then, that there's ownership involved there is interesting to me. And there are a lot of quilt blogs too. I think a lot of people come into quilting and get excited. Nah, I should back away from that a little bit. Sometimes I think in some ways we crafty people, most of the crafty people I know do it for love, right? And particularly as quilters, right? We know we're not going to get rich off our quilts. It's not our desire. It's not why we do it. And also, it's nearly impossible because of the time and the cost of the materials to get paid for a quilt, what it's actually worth. It's like, why bother? You're not going to. But there's certainly people who are like, okay, well, I think there are a lot of people, in the same way that I think there are a lot of people who would love to be Martha Stewart, which is not so much a great decorator and baker and homemaker, but someone who's gotten very rich as a businesswoman, which is who Martha Stewart really is, sort of banking on her talents and having a huge staff of people who make the things that are featured in her various enterprises, right? So I think there are people who are crafty and think, you know what, I'd like to be Tula Pink, I'd like to be Amy Butler, and there's the dream of that. Well, and so you go to their blogs, and they're designing quilts and that are not that interesting, but it's more trying to live into a dream of something, which people do all the time with all kinds of work, right? You do it all the time. And I don't blame people. It's a fun dream to have. I don't have it personally because I don't have the skills. I can make a decent quilt, but I'm not a designer. I'm not a fabric designer, certainly. But but I could see if just that being particularly, I just imagine like you're 32 and you're home with a baby and you're bored. Not that your baby is an absolutely delightful and wonderful, but you've got other, you sort of have these dreams of being a part of something bigger than yourself and somehow being recognized for being something other than a young mother. And you like making quilts and you love being part of the crafty community. And there are these people, like someone like Jackie Gehring, who is, of course, you know, much older than that young mother, you know, I mean, in her 50s or whatever. But anyway, but modern quilting, I think, in particular, has allowed very nearly instant fame for some people. And Jackie Gehring is one of those people, and who, you know, I think had been quilting 5 years when she published her first book. Right, and now she's sort of the queen of this movement. That sounds snarky, and I don't mean that, because I like Jackie Gehring quite a bit, and I like her quilts, and just her person. I've never met her, but just from what I've seen. But you know, but she's a very prominent person who became very prominent very quickly, and you could understand wanting that, and because one, we all want that, right? Not necessarily fame, but we all want universal love and approval, and quite frankly, in our culture, some measure of celebrity we think we would enjoy. So sometimes you go to quilting blogs where you feel like what the quilter is doing, what the person is doing, is kind of starting to create that empire and is sharing designs which are not particularly innovative or idiosyncratic, but are hoping to work up to a book. And quite frankly, there's some people who have worked up to books, and I look at their books, and it brings you right back to Quilt and Jenny's comments in terms of, this is copyrighted material. This is not original material. It's the person who got there first. So anyway, enough of that. I want to tell you, and I think I'll probably finish up here, but a couple episodes ago, Vivian commented about how the focus in quilting has changed over the years. You know, back in the day, maybe in the 70s and 80s, what people knew about, what people focused on, were block names and quilt styles like Baltimore album quilt, that sort of thing. And then maybe more into the 80s and 90s, and people got very into quilt and tool designers, and Vivian commented like that might have been the beginning of quilt celebrity, right? And then now, of course, there's an obsession with fabric designers. It's quite interesting. Well, I had an interesting email back and forth with a listener named Lizzie, who made her first quilt in 1980. And so she just wanted to sort of emphasize that point about the importance of tools and about the changes that really started happening in quilting around that, you know, after she started quilting. At the time when she made her first quilt, there weren't rotary cutters, there weren't all the rulers, and particularly the specialty rulers. It was, you know, there wasn't a wide selection of fabric, and you used scissors and cardboard templates and all of that. And she brought up Eleanor Burns and the importance of Eleanor Burns and sort of the revolution. Revolutionizing of quilting and bringing in concepts like, you know, well, quilt in a day, which is what Eleanor Burns is very famous for, you know, kind of this strip cutting and assembly piecing, and how that really changed quilting, you know, along with the rotary cutter and the other tools, the rulers, but these techniques that these tools led to, and Eleanor Burns popularized. And what Lizzie said is she's much more of a slow quilter, but it was hard, but it was just interesting to see that junction and the evolution of quilting, to go from sort of nothing there, no quilt industry, and a number of things happened to make that industry possible, but people like Eleanor Burns certainly played this huge role. And one of the things that I was thinking about this today, what's interesting about Eleanor Burns and Marianne Fonz, is these are both women who were probably in the 70s, I assume were in their 30s, but got divorced. I think Eleanor Burns' husband just walked out, but I could be wrong. She was on a podcast. It's been a few years now, I think, Craft Sanity. And it's an interesting story. And you know, I don't think I've ever watched Quilt in a Day, but I certainly just like her as a person. You know, listening to that made me admire her very much. And I admire Marianne Fonz as well, because these are women who were raising young families on their own, and they built empires, you know, out of quilting, out of this thing they loved to do. They figured that out, and they were smart, and they were ambitious, and they worked really hard. So it's interesting that those two women, I think, were so important in popularizing quilting. And I think sometimes maybe looked down upon a little bit because they've done so much to popularize quilting and make it a little easier for people. So anyway, I really enjoyed that exchange with Lizzie, and it's really, you know, I've mentioned being a part of the American Quilt Study Group and how I probably won't renew my membership. And most of the discussion and most of the writing that I've seen really has to do more with 19th century and early 20th century quilting. And while I find, you know, I'm interested in all periods of quilt history, I find myself really interested in the 70s, 80s, and 90s, kind of what came prior to us, you know, or to me, because I didn't start quilting till what, 2007 to 2008. But just before there, I mean, we just have everything now, you know, just imagine quilting before Craftsy, before these classes. If you need to learn a technique, you sign up for Craftsy or Creative Bug, or you go onto YouTube and you type in how to make a binding, and there it is. You know, that there one time there was this dark these dark ages, and where people like Lizzie were like trying to figure it out by herself. But she said that, you know, her mother used, Eleanor Burns used to go on, have these retreats, and that her mother and her friends would go. So I just think that's all interesting, and that's an interesting part of quilt history that, you know, isn't very sexy because it's the 1980s and everyone was wearing huge shoulder pads and had awful hair. So, hey, but anyway, so I appreciate hearing from Lizzie. I would love to hear from you. And I do have, we're about to go into my outro. That's because I'm a professional podcaster now. That's what we professional podcasters call our closing music, our outro. But I don't think my outro, I mentioned my email address, which is fdowell, D-O-W-E-L-L, at nc.rr.com. So email me if there's, you know, anything you want to have a back and forth on. I think I'm caught up on my emails. If I'm not, if you've emailed me recently and haven't heard back from me, let me know. And I will feel appropriately guilty and get back to you in the next, you know, by March. No, not even true. Soon. I'm trying to be good about that. So in any event, I guess it's like I want to say goodbye, but I can't because I've already pre-recorded my goodbyes. So I will just say, all right. Oh, you might have noticed no quilt diaries this time because I was sick last week and didn't do any. So next episode, which we will post a week from Wednesday, right? Because I'm being really good and cool and doing my 10-day podcast schedule. And that will be December 9th. So I will see you then. Thanks for listening to the Off Kilter Quilt. Come visit me online at offkilterquilt.com. Until next time, this is Frances. Remember, life is short. Quilt first.